able to tie Gatt. Look out here. Here he comes. There he goes. Brandon Banks is going to take this one to the house again. Unbelievable, this guy. Brandon Banks scores. Touchdown, Terrence Tolliver.
That was sick.
Don't go away, Matt Dunnigan.
That was sick right there. The timing of that throw, I mean, that was beautiful. That resembled Zach Collaros from last year.
Ray has a tip, and it's Simone Lawrence again! Exclamation point! Touchdown!
Welcome to Podski Wee-Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Oh, Mike, mid-April. We are so close. We are, I believe...
Whoa. Mid-April.
Did I say mid-April?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Start off the... We're 20 seconds in, and I'm already screwing up things. That's not a good sign. Mid-May, my friend. Mid-May. We are 2 weeks away as we sit here right now, Monday evening, recording the show from the opening of training camp. Doesn't it feel just like yesterday that we were mad that a certain former Hamilton Tiger Cat quarterback won the Grey Cup?
It does, you know, time flies, especially when you get into those older ages. It just seems to go faster and faster. And I don't know, man. Like you said, mid-May, we're almost there. So I'm pretty pumped about the whole thing.
One of the things that sort of kicks off, you know, we have free agency and then it kind of dies down. Then we have the combine. But I would say really the unofficial kickoff to the new season is the draft. And we had the draft, a little over a week ago was the CFL draft. The Ticats were selecting fourth overall in the first round. Mike and I aren't going to go through sort of like each individual player and talk about everything we know about them, because to be honest, we don't know all that much. We've said this countless times and we'll say it countless times more. It's tough to get a grasp of who these kids are because we don't get a chance to see them a lot. But I know Mike has done a little research on a player or two here, and I've done some talking to people and can talk about some players. But I think more I want to talk about just kind of how, like, I'll name the players off, and then we'll sort of talk about like what these selections kind of might mean for the team going forward and in this year and in the years to come, and kind of get that sense of it, because I don't think it's fair for these kids and for you out there, our listeners, for us to try to deep dive into who these players are, because I don't think we can give you as good of an indication as some other people out there. Three Down Nation, where the show we posted, they did a snap podcast mere hours after the draft was completed, and they talked about a bunch of players there. So if you want to get some in-depth stuff on the individual players, league-wide, not just for the Ticats, find that podcast, give it a listen. It's a really good listen. So the Ticats had... Seven picks in this draft?
Eight.
And here are the guys they took. In round one, fourth overall, they took Calgary defensive lineman Connor McGough. In the second round, number 13 overall, they took Calgary offensive lineman Braden Schramm. Then they took Kay Okafor, a defensive lineman with a 21st overall pick in the third round. Then Justin Vaughn, a defensive lineman from Fordham that they took in round five with the 38th overall pick. Then they took Jacob Scarfone, a wide receiver, with the 47th overall pick in the sixth round. Brett Golding, an offensive lineman from Wilfrid Laurier, they took 58th overall in the seventh round. And their final pick of the draft was a running back out of Montreal with the 66th overall pick by the name of Sean Thomas Erlington. So I know before the draft, on our sort of draft preview show, we talked about Danny Vandervoort and what the Ticats might do, and there's a lot of fans out there who wanted to see Vandervoort go to the Ticats at fourth overall. He was gone at number three overall, and the Ticats decided to go with Connor McGough, who was a bit of a combine stud from what I remember reading and seeing, defensive lineman. And if you look at this draft, they really sort of solidified the trenches. They took three defensive linemen in McGough, Okafor, and Vaughn. They took two offensive linemen in Schramm and Golding. It really looks like they were dealing with the trenches in this draft, and I think we all kind of agree that taking an offensive lineman in the CFL draft, never a bad idea, and we're seeing more and more Canadians play defensive line, also not a bad idea. And you know, the old adage is you win football games in the trenches, and in the CFL you win with high quality Canadian talent. The Ticats went after Canadian talent in the trenches, so that sort of shows me that's where they're building this team, at least this year. That's where they were looking. They weren't looking for the skill positions or anything like that. Really focusing on the trenches, and I kind of like what they did.
Yeah, I like what they did too. There's nothing wrong with getting some D linemen and some offensive linemen. Now, on the TSN broadcast, our first overall pick, Connor McGough, they listed him as an offensive lineman at first, and I remember looking at his weight, and it was like 247. I'm like, this guy's an offensive lineman. You got to be crazy, but they kind of got that wrong. But you kind of wonder how this draft would have been different if they would have got Vandervoort first overall, and like we saw today, someone got released, and maybe they would have been, you know, had their eye on a Canadian wide receiver, but. That's another topic we'll talk about a little bit later. But, yeah, I mean, you look at this draft and offensive linemen, defensive linemen, always a good thing to have. They could start two defensive linemen on the line possibly this year with Atkinson and Laurent, and maybe they're thinking they got to get some depth behind those guys, which is a great move in my opinion. Now, I took a look at Justin Vaughn, his film on YouTube. And listen, I'm not an expert. I'm an untrained eye, but to me, it looked like this guy is a hell of a player. Now, I don't know what level Fordham University is at in the States, but I mean, just looking at his film, this guy it looks like a powerful force. So, I out of all the guys, even though he's the fifth round pick, I've got my eye on him the most.
Well, and he's a Hamilton kid. I don't know if you saw the story that Drew Edwards did of him on Three Down Nation and the Hamilton Spectator. That's a guy that fans are going to latch onto. And you read the story, his dad played for the Ticats. Like, he's been a longtime Ticat fan. Like, this is a kid who fans are going to be rooting for to not only make this team, but to be a real solid contributor for this team. He's probably never going to be like a superstar. He's a fifth round pick, and you very rarely see guys go that late become your superstar players, but anything's possible. And I wish him the best of luck, but it just, his story is what's going to attract fans to be rooting for this kid. And I think that's kind of the case with a lot of these guys, they get drafted, you find out about them, and you really want to see them succeed. But I think for one, the talent mixed with the story, I think is going to make Justin Vaughn a big fan favorite in Hamilton this year.
And the size. And this guy's 6'5", 287 pounds. He's a big boy.
He sure is a big boy. And you bring up an interesting point. I think the Ticats could, if they really needed to, start three Canadians on the defensive line. You mentioned Atkinson and Teddy Laurent. Laurent obviously guaranteed to start. Don't forget Justin Capicotti. I know he's a defensive end, and we have two pretty good defensive ends in John Chick and Adrian Tracy, but push comes to shove, injuries or something, you could see Capicotti start. And then you look at a guy like Connor McGough, who is a defensive end, not a defensive tackle. The other two are more defensive tackles. Okafor and Vaughn especially is like you said, 6'5", 280 plus. That's an interior defensive lineman. Those guys are going to be backing up your Teddy Laurent, your Michael Atkinsons and stuff and such, along with Evan Gill, who's another Canadian offensive lineman the team drafted a few years ago that really hasn't had a chance to show anything, but is still on the squad, is going to be a backup. So, but you have McGough, and that's a guy who, if they need to start Capicotti at any point next year, be it to injury to a Canadian or even, say, something like an injury to Tracy or Chick, you know, Lord willing, that doesn't happen, knock on wood, but you have McGough there who could be the backup. And these rookies, as much as you don't want to see a rookie get too much playing time, they got to play to see if they can play, you know what I mean? Like, you kind of have to put them on the field to see if they can perform. So I think you look at this, and it gives you a really good indication of what the Ticats are thinking when it comes to their ratio. I think you look, and we've talked about this before, you got those three Canadians on the offensive line. I think they're penned in as starters, Filer, Bombin, and Revenberg. I don't think they're going anywhere. Craig Butler and Courtney Steven, two other Canadians that are guaranteed to start. And then you have Teddy Laurent. That's six Canadians that I think, barring injury at any point, those are the six guys are definitely going to be starting for this football team. And then you got to look for that seventh guy. We're going to talk a little bit later about Spencer Watt, who was released earlier today. Canadian receiver's a bit iffy. Now you got to look somewhere else. And I look at that defensive line, and I think Michael Atkinson can start in this league. I think he proved at the tail end of last year, he put together some like amazing plays. I thought he played really well late in the season, proved that he can be a guy who can handle the load, who can start in the Canadian Football League. And I think if you look at defensive line, offensive line, you see them building up depths at positions where they're going to start Canadians. And I know that the new way of thinking is you take the best Canadian wherever you can get them, and you worry about your ratio is very fluid. And Ken Austin has been very open about that since his time started in Hamilton 4 years ago, that the fluidity of his ratio is we're going to start the best seven Canadians regardless of if we have a backup there or not. And if someone gets hurt, then we have to change it. It's the way it goes. But I think you see in this draft, by drafting so many interior or just trenches guys, defensive and offensive linemen, I think you can kind of see where this team might go. And they might go to a five American wide receiver set and start two Canadians on the defensive line. And I know there were a lot of fans who saw this draft and were – because they didn't know the names of the guys. Vandervoort wasn't one of them. One of the big-name receivers didn't go here. They didn't take a guy like a Johnny Augustine who went undrafted. Like the name players in this draft were not drafted by Hamilton, and I think that pissed people off. But I think if you look at the Ticats roster makeup, I think these moves make sense, especially in light of what we will talk about later, the Spencer Watt release. I think it really starts to solidify that this draft class makes a lot of sense, what the Ticats are going to want to do ratio-wise in 2017 and beyond.
Absolutely. And, you know, yeah, we don't know the names of these guys necessarily, but, you know, Ken Austin over the last couple of years has had a knack for, you know, kind of going off the board and finding some hidden gems. Revenberg being the main example from last year. I mean, this guy is going to be a long time starter in this league, hopefully a long time starter for the Ticats, because he's got a ton of talent. But yeah, I'm just hoping that these guys can come in and maybe contribute on special teams, you know, bring back that factor, that danger factor of the special teams for the Ticats, because like I've mentioned a couple times before, it was kind of missing last year. So I'm hoping these guys can come in and really contribute on special teams and make a difference there.
I think that's where you're going to see McGough make his hay, especially this year. I don't expect to see him a ton on defense, but from the motor that he has, from some of the stuff I've seen on him, I think he's going to be a killer on special teams. And the Revenberg pick a year ago, great point. He was a kid not ranked in the CFL's Scouting Bureau's top 20. He was a guy that wasn't supposed to go that high. The Ticats traded up to ensure that they got him. And fans were hand-wringing then, too. They were like, why would you trade? This guy was going to be there later, blah, 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 blah. But you get the guy you want when you get him. You know what I mean? Like, what did that show Revenberg? That showed him that this team wants to invest in him. They wanted him so badly that they traded extra picks in order to move up to get him. That shows a level of commitment to someone that just sitting and waiting for someone to fall to you, and if they don't, oh, well, we'll go with the next guy, doesn't show. And I think, you know, there were a lot of analysts out there, both professional and otherwise, that kind of scoffed at the McGough pick, and that wasn't meant to be a rhyme, but just came out that way. But we don't know what this kid could do. Let's be honest. A lot of us out there who are talking about this haven't seen these kids play a lot. I know I did see him play at least once because he played for the Calgary Dinos, and I went to the Vanier Cup, but I couldn't tell you who I was looking at, to be honest with you. I just enjoyed what was a hell of a football game. And he was a part of that game, so maybe he had a good game, maybe he didn't, I don't know. But the Ticats did go two Dinos early on, so you got to think they had some scouts at that Vanier Cup when it was here. And I know a lot of people are very, very high on Braden Schramm. They think that he could be a really, really good offensive lineman. And Kay Okafor is a guy we haven't talked about much, but Justin Dunk said in his during the draft, we had a live stream on 3 Down Nation, and Justin would give his opinions, and he said Okafor could be, when it's all said and done, the best defensive lineman to come out of this draft. He's very raw, hasn't been playing football long, but the physical attributes are there, and if he gets the right tutelage, could be the very best defensive lineman to come out of this draft. And when you're drafting people, especially when you draft them in these mid to late rounds, you're looking for potential. So if this kid who went 21st overall in the third round ends up being one of the top defensive linemen in the CFL in a few years, great move by the Ticats.
Yeah, the thing is, it's so different from, say, the NFL draft, where in the first round, you know the names and you know that they're going to be starters like in year one or year two. This is different. It takes some time for these guys to make the jump from college football to professional football. It usually takes, you know, 2-3 years before we see what, you know, kind of players they really are. So even if we did get a chance to watch them more on TV and such, I don't think we'd have a good grasp on whether or not they're going to be really good or not. So, you know, it's just really tough.
No, you're probably correct. You're right. It's a big leap to go from Canadian university football or even any sort of college football, even in the States, to jumping into the professional ranks. But I think last year we were a little bit spoiled when it came to rookies. I think Revenberg included, we had three guys out of that draft, Taylor Loeffler in Winnipeg, Alex Singleton in Calgary, and Revenberg here in Hamilton, who really exceeded expectations. All three of those guys by the end of the season were starting caliber players. Loeffler was an all-star as a rookie, yep. And that kid was awesome. I loved watching him play. Now, Singleton had some professional experience before. I think he spent some time in the NFL, if I'm not mistaken. So he wasn't jumping straight from the college ranks into the pro ranks, but you rarely see rookies come in and start. To have three of them in one draft class start, not from day one, but throughout the season, end up getting starting jobs. Taylor Reed was released in Calgary because they couldn't keep Singleton off the field. Peter Diakowski is no longer a Hamilton Tiger Cat because last year Brandon Revenberg took his job. So we're talking about two players here who are veterans who have proven over time that they can play, and rookies came in to beat them out. That's special. I don't know if we're going to see any of those guys in here. Probably not. But I think that there's some talent here, obviously. But you're right. There's going to take some time for them to develop, and probably a lot of these people, if not all of them, are going to make their name on special teams. And as we know, special teams is big in the CFL, and that's where a lot of our best Canadians, Mike Daly, as a guy for the Ticats, who has had some starting experience, but he's a whiz on special teams. And that's where we're going to see a lot of these guys make their money this year, and it'll be interesting to watch.
Absolutely. I hope we don't really see any of these guys on the field unless they like beat out someone for the job, because that usually means that there's injuries. So, you know, let them develop. Hopefully we have some gems here in the near future.
What did you think? So I think we've talked a lot enough about sort of the Ticats draft. I want to talk about the draft, sort of the draft presentation as a whole. I don't want to get into what other teams did, because we got a million other podcasts out there that you should listen to them all. They're going to go over what their teams did. They either have or will go over what their teams did in the draft. I don't think we need to go into detail on any of the other picks, but I just kind of want to talk about the draft as a whole and the presentation of it on TSN. And while I will say that I'm happy that we get 2 hours of draft coverage on the network and that we get the whole thing live streamed on TSN Go and TSN.ca, I think that's great. It's way better than where we were 12 years ago when I remember sitting at the library at my university refreshing a web page to see if the Ticats were going to select Jesse Lumsden in the first round. We've come a long way since then. And I don't want to say that what we have now is garbage. It's not. It's much better than what it was before. But that doesn't mean it's perfect. And these are some complaints that I have personally. You're free to chime in, obviously, as well, Mike. But the big thing to me was, once again, when they switched from the television broadcast at 9 p.m. to the live stream on TSN.ca, there was a near interminable length of time before it was up. Last year, there was about 10 minutes that went by from the end of the television broadcast to the start of the live stream. This year, I'm not sure exactly what the time was, but they picked it up and an entire round, the entire third round of the draft, had passed. And to me, I understand maybe these guys need a little break, maybe they have to go to the bathroom, get a drink or whatever, but I don't think you can have – it's got to be – almost simultaneous where you're off the air and then on the other one. I don't think we can continue to miss a whole round of the draft. And then when they came back, they start talking about the first two rounds, and here are the guys that won the first two rounds, instead of catching us up on who went in the third round. I don't know if anyone at TSN is going to listen to this, probably not, but who knows. If anyone can get this into the lap of someone at TSN, please do, because they need to hear this. If you have fans watching the live stream of the Canadian Football League draft, they watched the one that was on television. And if they didn't, they found another way to catch up with who was picked. Tell us about the guys that we missed during your break. Don't tell us the things that we already saw. No one watching the live stream did not watch the television broadcast. Let's be honest. There's no one out there going, oh, to hell with the first two rounds. I can't wait till the fifth round of the CFL draft. That's when I'm getting interested. Come on, you're interested. Yeah. Like with any draft, NHL draft, NBA draft, NFL draft, you're more interested in the early rounds because that's where the bigger name players go. That's where the guys that, even as a casual fan, you know who those players are. Not necessarily all of them. And like you said, the Canadian draft is a different beast entirely. So there's not a lot of big name guys that go here. But that's where people are most interested. And it's on TV, which attracts more eyeballs than a live stream on a website does. Don't go back and tell us who went in picks 1-9 in the first round and 1-9 in the second round. Show us what we missed. It's to do that. It's just unnecessary.
Yeah, they need to figure that out. I mean, if they're gonna live stream it, then make sure that you're live streaming. I mean, I can't remember last year or the year before. We, like you said, we had the same problem. So you'd think that they'd learn from their past mistakes and get right on it. I mean, people are. They want to know who's going in the third round and the fourth round and fifth round. And all you said about, like, no one's tuning in to the third round of the CFL draft. It's just ridiculous. So, yeah, there's been – I'm happy that it's on TV the first two rounds and we got an extra hour this year. That was good. But, there needs to be lots more improvement that happens in the future here.
Well, another beef I had with the live stream – is that they said at the top, we're not going to go pick by pick. We're going to talk about other things. And I understand that they do that with the NFL draft too. If you're watching round six of the NFL draft on NFL Network, they're not talking about each individual player as they come up and going in depth in them. They'll talk about other things. I don't have an issue with that. What I do have an issue is with though, is if I wasn't on Twitter or had the Three Down Nation live blog or the CFL live feed on, CFL.ca live feed on my computer, I would not have known who was going. They did not have a ticker that said a player was selected. They didn't do anything to tell you who was going. They were having these conversations about things that sometimes were only tangentially related to the draft, whereas guys were getting picked and I was finding out through different sources. If that's the case, why even do the live stream? Why is it even there if you're not going to tell me who gets picked? And like I said, I don't need you to say in the sixth round, Jacob Ty Cats at 47th overall picked Jacob Scarfone, wide receiver from Guelph, and here's a bunch of stuff about him. Just show me on the bottom screen. Ty Cats pick is in. Here's who they pick. Lions pick is in. Here's who they pick. So on and so forth. So I can know who was going, even if you're not talking about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. In years past, I believe they brought in some CIS guys who actually have a lot of knowledge on these players. To me, Dave Naylor and Chris Schultz, I don't think they know anything about these guys, to be honest. Like, they're not watching CIS football because it's not on TV. So to bring in guys that actually know the CIS, know the teams, know the players, and can actually give us some knowledge on these guys would be great.
It would be fantastic. That was one of my biggest complaints about the draft presentation is Naylor and Schultz, who I like both of them. They're both knowledgeable CFL people. They're great to have on the pregame and the postgame stuff, but they're not draft people. Dwayne Ford was awesome. Dwayne Ford knows the draft inside and out, probably still to this day the best guy to cover the CFL draft because he knows who these guys are. He's watched the film. He studied these guys. He knows. But there are other guys out there. Justin Dunk from Three Down Nation is a guy who knows his stuff. Marshall Ferguson, who works for TSN 1150, yeah. So he works for the same company. Maybe a different branch, maybe a different arm of the company, but they both work. He works for TSN. That's a guy they should be picking up to put on these type of things. You mentioned ex-coaches or current coaches. Stefan Potasek, Camilton's current offensive coordinator, was on the CFL draft show a couple of times over the years when he was the head coach at McMaster. The yeah. NFL does this too, and I don't want to always compare it to the NFL, but the NFL draft and CFL draft are the two football drafts we got. The NFL draft had David Shaw, who's the head coach of the Stanford Cardinal. He was on there in the first round of the draft this year, talking about players. A couple of his guys went early, and he obviously was very effusive in his praise of those kids. But he also competes against a lot of these guys. So when a Pac-12 player got picked, oh, yeah, I played against him. I played against him in a bowl game. Like, there were instances where a college coach knows who these guys are and can give you insight that you're not going to get from guys who aren't paying attention all year. And like I said, I love Dave Naylor. I love Chris Schultz. But for this, they're not right. I thought Farhan Lalji was really good as the host. I think he knows his stuff too. He's very involved in minor football in BC. So I like him. I think Dwayne Ford is perfect. I think you throw Marshall Ferguson on there as a counter to Ford. They could be two guys who both know the draft that maybe have different opinions, but there's a guy you can have. And then you throw in a coach. I think you got a perfect panel for the draft.
Yeah, and they like I said, they've done it in the past, so I don't know why they didn't, you know, try to do it this year. It's just, like you said, Naylor and Schultz are great, but they just don't have the knowledge. I think they were just kind of winging it, to be honest. And they probably don't want to be, you know, put in that situation either. I mean, they if they don't know the facts, if they don't know the players, then why are they on the panel? This is a professional broadcast. there should be guys that have superior knowledge to everyone else on the panel.
For sure, for sure. And there were some other tiny mistakes, and these might be nitpicking, but it shows me like kind of the lack of care that they put into this. There were times when graphics would come up that would be incorrect. Like there were Canadian players not labeled as Canadian players. There were American players, like Chris Williams had a Canadian flag next to his name, and it's like, I wonder if Chris Williams knows he's Canadian. They put up incorrect stats at some points. They had the Argos last year at 10-8. And I know Mark Trestman is a really good head coach, but how he won five extra games over the offseason is anyone's guess. So, and I know these are nitpicky, small things. I get that. Dave Naylor at one point said that maybe the Ticats are drafting defensive linemen so that they have someone to sub in for Justin Capicotti, who's going to start for this team. Justin Capicotti's probably not going to start for this team. It's little things like that I feel like kind of bring down the broadcast as a whole, like guys not knowing their stuff, and then just like these little piddly mistakes that, and TSN makes these all the time, probably in every sport. I really only watch the CFL, like as far as things that TSN broadcasts. I haven't watched, I know TSN doesn't have hockey anymore, but I haven't watched a TSN hockey game in forever. So I don't know. I know the NHL is on Sportsnet now, so maybe they have screw-ups like this too, but it just feels like, felt very unprofessional for such a professional broadcast. And it's these tiny little things that get the Bush League label that we all know we hate about the CFL and stuff like that. But I just wish that they would be like a little bit more meticulous in their details, and then just a little bit better in who they bring on to discuss these things.
Yep. Always room for improvement. That's for sure.
Exactly. And I don't want to sit here and say that, I'm making complaints and we're making complaints about the things that we didn't like, but don't get us wrong. We're happy that the CFL draft is televised. We're happy that there's a live stream. That's all great stuff, but that doesn't mean that they can't continue to evolve and continue to get better. And when I wrote a piece for 3Down Nation about the things that ticked me off about the draft on TV, I got some comments about how, well, it's better than when you just had to read it in the newspaper. And that's true. It is. But it doesn't mean it's at where it should be. We should be maybe not expecting perfection, but we should always be looking for ways to improve. Constructive criticism, I think, as long as you have solutions to the issues you have, I don't think there's a problem with bringing up the issues. You know what I mean?
And we want everything to be better in the CFL. You know, we just want it to be the best that it can be. I want the play on the field to be top notch. I want the teams to make tons of money. We just both want the best for the league, and that the draft is part of it. So yeah, going forward, let's hope that they put more effort into this broadcast.
Couldn't have said it better myself, Mike. So that's our draft talk. We're gonna move on now to some CFL news, some Ticats news. We're going to start with the Ticats. Once again, it was one of those things where before the show, it's like, oh, we don't have a lot of Ticats stuff to talk about. And then bam, bam, a double hitter today of two big pieces of Ticats news. First one we'll talk about is the good news, and that is that John Chick has signed an extension through the 2018 season. I believe he had 1 year left on his deal, so this adds another year to his deal. After last year's stellar season, where I will once again say that I admittedly got it totally wrong on him. If you recall, you can go back and listen. When the Ticats signed him, I was not at all – well, I wouldn't say I was not at all for it, but I was very hesitant to get fully behind John Chick signing. And then last year he went out and made me look like an absolute fool. And this guy, 33, 34 years of age, still is a stud. Glad to see he's got another year coming back to the Ticats. If he continues to produce like that, this guy could be I don't think he's going to play anywhere else in his CFL career. I think now that he's in Hamilton, I think this is the place he's going to stick until he's done. But getting him to on another year after the year he had is a good job by the front office to get him back. What do you think?
I would have to totally agree with you on that. He just was lights out last year. I believe he was second in the league in sacks. And you know, it wasn't just sacks too. He made just great plays on defense all year long. So I hope that he still has that fire. I'm sure he does. I'd bet on it if I could. And I mean, I think he's going to be just as good as he was last year.
John Chick made one of my favorite plays of all last season in the game against the Red Blacks in Ottawa in overtime, comes around the edge, strips Henry Burris of the ball. Mm-hmm. I was in Ottawa for the game. I was taking heat from a couple of Ottawa fans in that game. I think I even mentioned it on the show when the week after I went. Took heat. Why are you cheering? Go back to Hamilton. Like, we're in Ottawa. But, you know, regular fan garbage that, you know, you don't have time for. And when Chick came across the line, spun right past his blocker and stripped the ball from Burris, and Ticats recovered. Oh, I was doing a dance in my seat, dude. It was awesome. It was so much fun to see. And so for that alone, I'm glad that he's back. But I think he's going to have maybe not a monster season, but I think he's going to be just as solid as he was last year. And maybe one of the best free agent pickups this team has ever made in the Ken Austin era.
Yeah, it's definitely up there. I think that he may not have the same amount of sacks as he did last year, but he will contribute in other ways that aren't so apparent to the, you know, the regular viewer. You know, the regular fan doesn't see, say, if John Chick drops back and makes a coverage play kind of deal. So I think he'll contribute in many different ways. He might not have 14 sacks again, but he'll be a force on the field. I guarantee it.
Well, and I think him coming here last year and playing as well as he did also shows his willingness to adapt. When he was in Saskatchewan all those years, he was strictly a pass rusher. Didn't do a lot of dropping back into coverage, but we saw that a lot last year. He had an interception in the very first game of last season that was called back, unfortunately, but it showed his willingness to adapt his game. And for a veteran player to do that, a guy who's been an all-star in this league, been, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't he the most outstanding defensive player at one point with Saskatchewan? So, like, this is a guy who has proven his worth in this league, but to still be willing to learn, to adapt, shows a lot about the character of the man that he is.
Yeah, from, you know, I never met the guy, never talked to the guy, but from all accounts, I've heard that he's a, you know, a great human being as well as a great football player.
So Chick is staying through 2018, but rumors, or not even rumors, a report from Justin Dunk of Three Down Nation, my colleague, says that the Ticats have let go receiver Spencer Watt. Watt was signed, I believe, in 2015, then missed the entire 2015 season with a torn Achilles, came back last year, played in all 18 games, caught 21 passes on that wide side, that Z receiver position that never really sees any attention. It's interesting because by losing Watt, the Ticats now have three or four receivers, Canadian receivers that is, on their roster. They have combined in their career for two catches, and both of them are by Mike Jones last year. So not a lot of Canadian talent at the receiver position, or at least not a lot of proven Canadian talent at the receiver position. Obviously, the rumors are of Andy Fantu's re-signing are still out there. He has nothing official has happened. But even so, he won't be available until probably Labor Day or Thanksgiving or somewhere around there. So the Ticats Canadian receiver is threadbare at this point. So again, we were talking a little bit about with the draft picks, what the Ticats might do and all that sort of stuff, and how it might talk about their, like, deal with their ratio and such. Maybe the Ticats are going five Americans at the wide receiver position.
Well, you'd have to assume that. I'm looking at the receivers right now, and yeah, they have a couple Canadian guys, like you said, Mike Jones, and we got Giovanni Aprile. But yeah, these guys don't have experience at all. So I'm gonna go under the assumption that there's gonna be five American wide receivers, at least at the start of the season, at least if they re-sign Fandews, at least until he comes back, because otherwise I guess it doesn't matter though, really. I mean, if they put them out, if no one ever throws them the ball, then what does it matter, right? If they're out on that Z position, well, what does it matter?
Well, true. Very good point.
What does it matter who's out there? It could be friggin' Jerry Rice out there. If he doesn't get the ball thrown his way, then, you know, it's pretty much useless.
No, that's true. I feel like that wide side receiver position has sort of become a no man's land through the, well, we're just going to stick a Canadian out there and then we don't have to we get one Canadian starter and then we don't have to worry about it. But what if you put an American out there? Like, I've seen Americans play out there. I believe it was Junior Kreiner with Ottawa played the wide side position last year some. The Argos had Julian Posey play a little Z last year for them. It's abnormal and it's unorthodox and it's not the norm. I get that. But what if you put a guy like Junior Collins out at that wide position? You know, Zach Caleros can throw the deep ball. And if you got a guy with speed out there who maybe you trust a little bit more, maybe he sees a little bit more action. But it's funny because I remember when they brought in Watt, that's when they got rid of Sam Giguere. And Sam Giguere's numbers for a guy that played that wide position, like, he was catching like 30, 40 balls a year and putting up like 500 plus yards at that position. And then Watt came in here and in one season had 21 catches for a little over 200 yards. Like, I don't think we appreciated Sam Giguere as much as we maybe should have as a guy who didn't live up to, like, there was obviously a ton of hype coming on him, the speed, the size, the muscles, everything about it. He never really developed into that stud Canadian that we thought he would. But when you look at the numbers he put up out there, they're pretty darn good.
Yeah, for that position, definitely. I always thought that if they would have put Jiguer in the slot or just not in the Z position, he would have thrived a lot more than he did. Because I remember, like you said, I remember when he came in, there was a ton of hype around this guy. He was going to be a huge star, and he's a good player, but he just never really had that opportunity to put up those big numbers.
No, he really didn't. And Watt didn't really get a chance here to do it. I remember he had a couple of catches and showed a little bit of burst, but never really got a chance to really do anything with the Ticats. And maybe he heads back to Toronto, who could use some receiver help and some Canadian help, or maybe he's headed to a place like Winnipeg. Winnipeg's Canadian receivers might be the only ones who's on par with Hamilton's terribleness at that position. And again, like we talked about with the draft kids, sometimes you've got to play these young guys. Maybe a guy like Mike Jones does become a starter and gets a chance to prove that he can play and gets an opportunity. And like I said earlier, you never know if these kids can play until you let them play, you know?
We haven't seen anything from Mike Jones really, aside from a couple, catches last season. So I have no idea what this guy's talent is or what his potential is. So maybe we get to see some of that this year.
Well, in a month from today-ish, 32 days from today, we'll have seen him play two preseason games, Mike. So we're gonna get to know him a little bit better over the course of the next month, which is a very exciting thing to say. Last bit Absolutely. Of Ticats news is some kicker talk. I know everyone loves talking kickers, but there's some kicker news here in the Hammer. One is that the Browns cut Brett Maher, former Ticats kicker, after the NFL draft. He was let go. And one of the many, many, many kicking prospects that the Ticats brought in during minicamp a month ago, Jordan Gay, who was with the Buffalo Bills before, was a kickoff specialist, and he was brought in to potentially replace Brett Maher. He is signed with the Tennessee Titans, so I guess he's out of the equation for now. Perhaps Maher's back in. We're probably getting a little bit more of an idea of who this kicker is going to be. I know there's a guy, kicker, I believe his name is Craig Peterson, who announced on Twitter that he signed with the Ticats. I know Sergio Castillo, former Winnipeg Blue Bomber, former Hamilton Tire Cat, was brought in. So maybe now that Mars released and looking for a job, maybe they bring him back to compete for this job. So there's a little bit more clarity at the kicking position, but nowhere near enough for us to be able to really sink our teeth into who could be the kicker of the Ticats in 2017, eh?
No, not at all. And I don't see Maher coming back to Hamilton, because I think he's going to want a big contract for a kicker. We saw now, it's not probably not going to be what Medlock received or anything like that, but we saw last year that Medlock wanted a lot of money and the Ticats thought he wasn't worth it. This is basically what it comes down to. So I'm not sure if we're going to see Maher back in Ticats uniform. I'd love to see him back. I thought he did, for the most part, a really good job last year. So just for a comfort zone, I'd like to see him back. You know, I was comfortable with him kicking the field goals, the long-distance field goals. He was a good punter. So to have him back would be a great thing for the Ticats, but I don't really see it happening. I think we're going to see one of these guys that came into minicamp, you know, an unknown player, maybe that guy that was in the Arena League that you just mentioned, maybe he's going to be a guy that really steps up his game and becomes a star in the league this year.
Brett Maher kicked the most exciting kickoff rouge in maybe the history of the CFL. So it's a memory that will last for a long time. I've never seen a crowd go as nuts for a kickoff single as I did on that play that tied that playoff game last year. I would like to see him back. I think that he faltered a little bit down the stretch, and he obviously had his problems at certain points, but I thought he was a pretty steady kicker. I thought he was a really good punter. I would like to see him back, but I kind of agree with you. I think he probably will want a little bit more than, say, what one of these newer guys will look for. They're probably going to get league minimum. I think Maher's proved, especially last year in this environment with this team, that he deserves a little bit more than that, and the money might not be there. But if he came back, I'd welcome him back with open arms. I think Sergio Castillo, I think because of his experience, is a guy that I think will probably see kind of take that job, because I remember last year it was Maher and the kicker from Alabama, Cody Mandel, who was more of a punter than a place kicker, and they had that battle. The two of them had that battle in preseason, and Maher obviously beat him out big time for it. So I don't know. I think having a little bit of CFL experience, I think, goes a long way. And I think having experience kicking in Hamilton might go a long way. I think Castillo's done that before. I think he was with the Ticats in like 2013 or 2014. So I think it was 2014 for like he was on like the practice roster or something. So I think he's been here and has kicked in Horns Field, and I think that makes a big difference. So I don't know. It's obviously still one spot that's going to be wide open come training camp, and this team has a few position battles, but this one, much like last year, will be worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah, it's, you know, people don't get too excited over kickers, but it is a really important spot. So hopefully we get the right guy. You know, I like watching my kicker play on my team, and I just have that confidence that he's going to make the kick. You know, in years past, there's been some guys that I'm like, if it's over 45 yards, I'm like, oh, he's not going to make this. There's no way. But I had that confidence with Maher last year. So that's just, from a fan's point of view, that's all I want, is the confidence that if there needs to be a kick that's going to win a game, you know, a 50-yard or whatever, we have to have the confidence in the kicker to go in there and nail that kick. That's the bottom line.
Because Stone Cold said so.
Yes. Yeah, there it is. There it is.
There's our one wrestling reference for the week.
Yeah.
Check that off the list. Okay, CFL news. We're still looking for a new commissioner for the CFL, and we heard a couple of names say themselves that they're interested, one of which you sort of kind of called a few weeks back. Dwayne Ford and Glenn Suter both expressed interest in being the CFL's general manager. Mike, I believe two or three episodes ago, said that he heard Glenn Suter. Well, why don't you tell the story?
Well, I can't remember where I heard the interview. It might have been Saskatchewan radio. I can't remember. But he was naming things that he wants the next commissioner to be a football guy, and he should have this experience and that experience. And I took it as he's talking about himself. Now, he said later on in the interview that he's not, you know, talking about himself essentially, but he was, and I knew it. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think that guys like that should be interviewed. I don't necessarily think that they're the right person for the job, but they should be given a chance to lay out their plan and give their ideas on how to move this league forward. So I thought that he wanted it. I thought he wanted to have that job. And then just recently he clarified that and said that he would be very interested in the job, as well as Dwayne Ford.
So this is why I brought this up, because I wanted to kind of get your feelings on this, because there seems to be two camps. There's the camp that's like, yes, a guy like Dwayne Ford would be perfect as a CFL commissioner. And then there's guys who say he has no business background, absolutely not. He'd be the worst decision. It'd look bad, blah, 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 blah. Where do you sort of stand on it? Because Ford's obviously a football guy, played in the league, knows the Canadian aspect of the game really well. Obviously, he's a broadcaster. Suter, same thing. Where do you stand on sort of the football guy, quote unquote, versus, say, the businessman? Do you have a preference, or is it more you just think whoever lays their plan best out for the board, be it whatever they are, is the guy that should get the job?
I'm going to go with a football guy. When was the last time we had a football guy as the commissioner? I'd have to say back to Larry Smith.
Yeah, maybe Larry. Yeah, I think you're right, because Larry Smith led to Michael Lisko, if I'm not – well, Larry Smith led to, I think, John Torrey, who led to Michael Lisko, who led to Tom Wright, who led to Mark Cohan. Yeah, so I guess it would be.
Yeah, and there's been various degrees of success over with those guys, Cohan being the one with the most success, I believe we'd all agree on. I don't know. They went with Orridge. He didn't really know the league at all, and that was a disaster. So, I mean, he was known as a business guy, I believe. I just think that they need a guy who has a ton of passion for this league, who knows the league. And, you know, the business side of it, it's – what is it? Is it going to sponsorships and trying to sell this game? Because if you have a guy that has a ton of experience, who's played in the league, who follows the league, who has a huge passion for this league, then what's wrong with a guy like that trying to sell it to sponsors? I'm sure that he's going to have all the information in front of him. He doesn't have to be a guy, you know, who's, you know, he doesn't have to be, oh, I Donald Trump or something, you know, a guy who's made billions and billions of dollars to be the CFL commissioner. It just, I believe that they just need a guy who has a ton of passion for the league and you know, hire a guy that has some business background, you know, to help you out. There's nothing wrong with that. So I'm going to go and say that I want a football guy as the next commissioner, whether it be Dwayne Ford or Glenn Sutter or whoever. I just want a guy who knows this league, who has a ton of passion for it, and can sell it. So that's my opinion on that.
Geez, ton of passion for the league, Mike. I think you're talking about yourself there. You want to be commissioner of the CFL?
maybe.
That was a very passionate plea. My colleague at Three Down Nation, John Hodge, who everyone knows for the Blue Bomber Talk podcast and his writings at Three Down Nation, he was talking to someone about it, and I saw an interesting tweet. Someone was like, no, it's got to be a businessman. And John said, look, the league is filled with businessmen. The league offices are all businessmen. There's no football people. Why not put a football guy in charge? And it really kind of opened my eyes to that actually makes a ton of sense. There are a ton of smart business people in the league offices that can do the negotiations, stuff like that. Why not put a football guy in charge? Now, I just think whoever is the best person for the job should get the job. So I'm not opposed or for either way, like, you know, very vehemently in either direction for a football guy or not a football guy. Just give me the best possible commissioner. And the thing that needs to happen is he needs to be given a chance. Like, we can talk about how Orridge failed and how he's leaving early and how Cohan succeeded and all that other sort of stuff. But as if the board of governors, the owners of these teams, don't allow the commissioner the ability to do his job, it's not going to matter who you stick in the chair. And
he needs power, right? He needs a guy that can make an executive decision and the owners trust in that decision. You know, we've talked about it before. I'm sure it's a tough job to be the CFL commissioner, because if you have four or five owners that are against you, then you're out, buddy. I mean, you're out. So I think the next guy needs to have a little bit of leeway to be able to do what he believes in, to make the product better, to make more money for the league, all that stuff. There needs to be a guy that has the power to be able to make those changes.
Abso-freaking-lutely, man. Could not have said it better myself. I'm going to be hashtag Mike for Commish. That's coming up. Right. Your passion is evident. Your knowledge is evident. Mike for Commish. That's what we're going to be doing with this.
He might be a slight pay raise in what I'm doing now, so that would be nice as well.
there you go. Okay, next bit of news. The Ottawa Redblacks signed a couple of CFL veterans over the last couple of weeks. They picked up former Toronto Argonaut Winnipeg Blue Bomber Torrey Gurley and former Edmonton Eskimo Shakir Bell. Two pretty good moves by Ottawa, don't you think?
I'd have to say so. Gurley is he didn't really live up to expectations when he signed with Winnipeg, but you know, it was halfway through the season, or three-quarters way through the season. And I don't believe he got enough time to get into that system. And Shakir Bell, Shakir Bell's a great, great running back. He'd still be in Edmonton if it wasn't for John Waite. So, you know, those two signings are pretty big for the offense of the Ottawa Redblacks. So better watch out for those guys, I think, this year.
You know what's funny, though, is both of these guys could be cut in training camp. Because there's a lot of talent in the receiving corps in Ottawa. Obviously, Greg Ellingson and Brad Sinopoli are two guys that are going to be starting for that team. I don't think there's any chance either of those guys aren't suiting up in week one for the Red Blacks. They brought in Kenny Shaw. They brought in Deontay Spencer. There's some talent in that receiving corps, and Gurley could add to that. Don't get me wrong. So it's a great signing. But I would also not be surprised if he was brought in and did not see the field at all, was let go. Same with Shakir Bell. There's a lot of good running backs in Ottawa backfield. Moses Madu is there. They brought back William Powell, who, after an excellent late-season run in 2015, looked like he was going to be an absolute stud in 2016, and then got hurt in camp, first day of camp. I believe he tore his ACL and missed the rest of the season, but they brought him back because they obviously see something in him. Him and Bell are kind of similar, and I love Shakir Bell. Shakir Bell was fun to watch for the Eskimos when he got a chance to play over the last couple of years. So I think that's a great signing, but I could also see both these guys not making the team, but I could also see both these guys starting for him. So it's going to make for a heck of a battle in Ottawa at both the running back and receiver positions. And yeah, like I think the East is shaping up with the moves that every team's kind of made. It's shaping up to be a bit of a dogfight out here.
It would seem that way right now. It would seem that way.
But of course, we're still a little over a month away from the season, so who knows what could happen.
Exactly, and I think that bringing in Gurley gives them the height in that receiving core. You know, Ellingson, Sinopoli, Kenny Shaw, Deontay Spencer. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think any of those guys are particularly tall. So, yeah, he could be cut, or he could be that end zone threat with the leaping ability and the height. So, well, we shall see.
Like he was in Toronto in 2015. I believe he led the league in touchdown catches with like 10. And he was also a guy who played that Z position and caught a ton of balls for the Argos in 2015. Wherein, who was their quarterback? Trevor Harris. So there's some continuity there, some familiarity there. He could end up being one of those late free agent pickups that people look back on and go, that was a hell of a move by Ottawa, and that's why they got where they got. Last bit of news, we got to talk Ricky Foley. Mike, he sent out a tweet, and I have it right here. It says, Zero Dark 3095 activated. I don't want to get... I
what
don't.
Is that? What is that? Zero Dark 3095? Come on, man. I don't know. Whatever.
I don't want to go too much into how stupid that sounded. Personally, why wouldn't it have just been Zero Dark 95? You know what? I don't want to get into his brain and try to figure out why he says and does the things that he does. But it sure sounded like he had signed with a team or was about to sign with a team or something. It certainly seems like he's going to be heading back to the CFL. There's a lot of talk about how it might be with Hamilton. People were reading into the tweet, Zero Dark 30 was this movie that was made a few years ago, and it had to do with capturing Osama bin Laden, and it was about how the most hated man was being looked for, and Foley's the most hated man in Hamilton, so therefore, like, it was some real conspiracy theory level that was just, okay, what the hell are you talking about? Like, it was pretty incredible, to be perfectly honest. But anyway, I'm guessing he signed somewhere. I really hope to hell it's not Hamilton, and I think the John Chick extension kind of probably, hopefully, puts a cap on the idea of Foley signing in Hamilton. I don't know where this guy's going to go, but I just hope it's not here.
I hope so, too. I don't see the talent there anymore. Maybe not the talent, but he's just not the player that he used to be, and there's no reason for the Ticats to bring him in. And what kind of makes me scratch my head a bit is that he sent this tweet out and there's still no leaked report about where he's signing or anything like that, which is very strange to me. I guess they're just keeping it under wraps really well, but usually these things come out relatively quickly.
Yeah, especially when it comes to Foley. Foley news tends to come rather fast and furious. And people who know why that is, and people who don't, feel free to hit me up privately, and I'll give you. I told Mike beforehand, but I don't really want to reveal anything on the show. So I'm sorry if you're looking for some inside news, but if you want to know why Ricky Foley usually gets some knows what we know what we know about Ricky Foley, hit me up on Twitter in a private message, and I'll give you the info. Anyway, where do you think he might land? Honestly, I can think maybe Saskatchewan. He seems to be pretty well liked there. Maybe Ottawa. Allow him to stay close to. Ish to his home. I like when we got released, I was always looking and going, like, where does this guy fit in anywhere? Because, you know, personal feelings aside, I think he's diminished as a player. He's a Canadian guy, so he's gonna obviously command a little bit more money, and I just don't see a fit for him anywhere. And I don't know, those are really the only two places I can think of that could really use a guy or would want to bring in a guy like that, is Ottawa, who could use some more Canadian. Ottawa has a lot of Canadian talent, but they don't have a ton of Canadian depth, I don't find. And Saskatchewan, just because he's well liked there, and I think he liked his time there as well. Outside of those two teams, I'm not sure where he'd go.
I'm completely drawing a blank here as well. Someone would bring him in, I think, if it was in the, maybe as a rotation guy on the line at the right price, he could go to a couple spots, but I can't put my finger on it right now. I just don't see where he would sign right now. I just can't think of it.
Well, I guess we'll find out sooner rather than later. Maybe by the next time you and I sit down in a couple of weeks to talk more CFL, we'll have some news on Ricky Foley and where he's going to be applying his Zero Dark 3095 trade in 2017.
Yeah. What the f*** that means?
So that's it. We were going to do our CFL ratings for video games, finish that off with our Western wide receivers, but we decided we're going to leave that for the next episode. So, Adam, don't worry. Your East rankings will get read on the show next time Mike and I sit down and talk. We'll get
West?
On. Yeah, I said yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No, yeah, we did East.
Yeah. My bad.
So I screwed up at the beginning. You screwed up at the end. Perfect symmetry. Yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, don't worry. We'll get those out there next time we sit down and record. But that's it for this week. So you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or listen to it or download it at 3downnation.com. If you want to ask Mike or myself a question that we will answer on the show, you can always hit us up on Twitter. Mike, as I say every week, your Twitter handle, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And you can find me at joshsmith_82. And you can always post those questions in the comment section of 3downnation. So that was episode 73 of Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.